echoed through the house as he walked upstairs. Moments later, silence fell. We sat there, staring at each other. After several minutes, Maya whimpered and started to speak.
"What are you going to—"
"Shut up,"
growled one of the men. He took a warning step toward her. Blanching, she cringed but still looked as though she might say something else. I caught her eye and shook my head. She stayed silent, eyes wide, and a slight tremble to her lip. There's nothing worse than waiting and not knowing what'll happen to you. Your own imagination can be crueler than any captor. Since our guards wouldn't talk to us or tell us what was in store, I imagined all sorts of horrible scenarios. The guns were the obvious threat, and I found myself pondering what a bullet would feel like. Painful, presumably. And where would they shoot? Through the heart? Or the head? Quick death, but somewhere else. Like the stomach? That would be slow and painful. I shuddered at the thought of my life bleeding out of me. Thinking of all that blood put me in mind of the Badika house and maybe having her throat slit. These men could have knives as well as guns. Of course, I had to wonder why we were still alive at all. Clearly, they wanted something from us. But what? They weren't asking for information. And they were human. What would humans want with us? Usually, the most we feared from humans was either running into crazy slayer types or those who wanted to experiment on us. These seemed like neither. So what did they want? Why were we here? Over and over, I imagined more awful, gruesome fates. The looks on my friends' faces showed I wasn't the only one who could envision creative torments. The smell of sweat and fear filled the room. I lost track of time and was suddenly jolted out of my imaginings when footsteps sounded on the stairs. The lead captor stepped into the hall. The rest of the men straightened up, tension crackling around them. Oh, God. This was it, I realized. This was what we'd been waiting for.
"Yes, sir," I heard the leader say. "They're in here, just like you wanted."
Finally, I realized. The person behind our kidnapping. Panic shot through me. I had to escape.
"Let us out of here,"
I yelled, straining at my bindings.
"Let us out of here, you son of a—"
I stopped. Something inside me shriveled up. My throat went dry. My heart wanted to stop. The guard had returned with a man and a woman I didn't recognize. I did, however, recognize that they were Strogoi. Real, live, well, figuratively speaking, Strogoi. It all suddenly clicked together. It wasn't just the Spokane reports that had been true. What we'd feared, Strogoi working with humans, had come true. This changes everything. Daylight wasn't safe anymore. None of us were safe anymore. Worse, I realized these must be the rogue Strogoi, the ones who had attacked the two Maroi families with human help. Again, those horrible memories came to me. Bodies and blood everywhere. Bile rose in my throat, and I tried to shift my thoughts from the past to the present situation. Not that that was any more reassuring. Maroi had pale skin, the kind of skin that blushed and burned easily. But these vampires, their skin was white, chalky in a way that made it look like the result of a bad makeup job. The pupils of their eyes had a red ring around them, driving home what monsters they were. The woman, actually, reminded me of Natalie, my poor friend whose father had convinced her to turn Strogoi. It took me a few moments to figure out what the resemblance was, because they looked nothing alike. This woman was short, probably human before becoming Strogoi, and had brown hair with a bad highlighting job. Then it hit me. This Strogoi was a new one, much as Natalie had been. It didn't become obvious until I compared her with the Strogoi man. The Strogoi woman's face had a little life in it, but his was the face of death. His face was completely devoid of any sort of warmth or gentler emotion. His expression was cold and calculating, laced with malicious amusement. He was tall, as tall as Dimitri, and had a slender frame that indicated he'd been Maroi before changing over. Shoulder-length black hair framed his face and stood out against the bright scarlet of his dress shirt. His eyes were so dark and brown that without the red ring, it would have been almost impossible to tell where pupil ended and iris began. One of the guards shoved me hard, even though I'd been silent. He glanced up at the Strigoi man. "You want me to gag her?" I suddenly realized I'd been hunching into the back of my chair, unconsciously trying to get as far away from him as possible. He realized this too, and a thin, toothless smile crossed his lips.
"No,"
he said. His voice was silky and low.
"I'd like to hear what she has to say."
He raised an eyebrow at me.
"Please, continue."
I swallowed.
"No? Nothing to add?"
"Well, do feel free to pipe up if something else comes to mind." "Isaiah!" exclaimed the woman. "Why are you keeping them here? Why haven't you just contacted the others?"
"Elena, Elena,"
Isaiah murmured to her. "Behave yourself. I'm not going to pass up the chance to enjoy myself with two Maroi and..." He walked behind my chair and lifted my hair, making me shudder. A moment later, he peered at Mason and Eddie's necks as well.
"Three unblooded dampiers."
He spoke those words with an almost happy sigh, and I realized he'd been looking for guardian tattoos. Strolling over to Maya and Christian, Isaiah rested a hand on his hip as he studied them. Maya could only meet his eyes for an instant before looking away. Christian's fear was palpable, but he managed to return the Strigoi scrutiny. It made me proud.
"Look at these eyes, Elena."
Elena walked over and stood beside Isaiah as he spoke.
"That pale blue, like ice. Like aquamarines. You almost never get that outside of the royal houses. Badikas, Ozeras, the occasional Zeklos."
"Ozera,"
said Christian, trying very hard to sound fearless. Isaiah tilted his head.
"Really? Surely not."
He leaned closer to Christian.
"But the age is right. And that hair."
He smiled.
"Lucas and Moira's son?"
Christian said nothing, but the confirmation on his face was obvious.
"I knew your parents. Great people. Unparalleled. Their deaths were a shame, but, well, I dare say they brought that on themselves. I told them they shouldn't have gone back for you.
Would have been wasteful to awaken you so young. They claimed they were going to just keep you around and waken you when you were older. I warned them that that would be a disaster, but..."
"Well..."
He gave a delicate shrug. "Awaken" was the term Strigoi used among themselves when they changed over. It sounded like a religious experience.
"They wouldn't listen, and disaster met them in a different way."
Hatred, deep and dark, boiled behind Christian's eyes. Isaiah smiled again.
"It's quite touching that you should find your way to me after all this time. Perhaps I can realize their dream after all."
"Isaiah," said the woman, Elena, again. Every word out of her mouth seemed like a whine.
"Call the others! Stop giving me orders!"
Isaiah grabbed her shoulder and shoved her away, except that the push knocked her across the room and almost through the wall. She just barely threw her hand out in time to stop the impact. Strigoi had better reflexes than dampiers, or even Maroi. Her lack of grace meant he'd completely caught her off guard. And really, he'd barely touched her. The push had been light, yet it had packed the force of a small car. This further enforced my belief that he was in another class altogether. His strength beat hers by magnitudes. She was like a fly he could swat away. Strigoi power increased with age, as well as through the consumption of Moroi blood and, to a lesser extent, Dampir blood. This guy wasn't just old, I realized. He was ancient, and he'd drunk a lot of blood over the years. Terror filled Elena's features, and I could understand her fear. Strigoi turned against each other all the time. He could have ripped her head off if he wanted. She cowered, averting her eyes. I'm sorry, Isaiah. Isaiah smoothed his shirt, not that it had been wrinkled. His voice took on the cold pleasantness he'd affected earlier.
You clearly have opinions here, Elena, and I welcome you voicing them in a civilized manner. What do you think we should do with these cubs?
You should, that is, I think we should just take them now, especially the Moroi. She was clearly working hard not to whine again and annoy him. Unless, you aren't going to throw another dinner party, are you? It's a complete waste. We'll have to share, and you know the others won't be grateful. They never are.
I'm not making a dinner party out of them, he declared loftily.
Dinner party?
But I'm not killing them yet, either. You're young, Elena. You only think about immediate gratification. When you're as old as me, you won't be so impatient.
She rolled her eyes when he wasn't looking. Turning, he swept his gaze over me, Mason, and Eddie.
You three, I'm afraid, are going to die. There's no avoiding it. I'd like to say I'm sorry, but, well, I'm not. Such is the way of the world. You do have a choice in how you die, however, and that will be dictated by your behavior.
His eyes lingered on me. I didn't really get why everyone seemed to be singling me out as the troublemaker here. Well, maybe I did.
Some of you will die more painfully than others.
I didn't need to see Mason and Eddie to know their fear mirrored mine. I was pretty sure I even heard Eddie whimper. Isaiah abruptly turned on his heels, military style, and faced Maya and Christian.
You two, fortunately, have options. Only one of you will die. The other will live on in glorious immortality. I'll even be kind enough to take you under my wing until you're a little older. Such is my charity.
I couldn't help it. I choked on a laugh. Isaiah spun around and stared at me. I fell silent and waited for him to throw me across the room like he had Elena. But he did nothing else but stare. It was enough. My heart raced, and I felt tears brim in my eyes. My fear shamed me. I wanted to be like Dimitri, maybe even like my mother. After several long, agonizing moments, Isaiah turned back to the Moroi.
Now, as I was saying, one of you will be awakened and live forever. But it will not be me who wakens you. You will choose to be awakened willingly.
Not likely, said Christian. He packed as much snarky defiance as he could manage into those two words, but it was still obvious to everyone else in the room that he was scared out of his mind.
Oh, how I love the Ozera spirit, mused Isaiah.
He glanced at Maya, his red eyes gleaming. She shrank back in fear.
But don't let him upstage you, my dear. There's strength in common blood, too. And here's how it will be decided.
He pointed at us Dampirs. His gaze chilled me all over, and I imagined I could smell the stink of decay.
If you want to live, all you have to do is kill one of these three.
He turned back to the Moroi.
That's it. Not unpleasant at all. Just tell one of these gentlemen here you want to do it. They'll release you. Then you drink from them and are awakened as one of us. Whoever does this first walks free. The other will be dinner for Elena and me.
Silence hung in the room. No, said Christian. No way am I killing one of my friends. I don't care what you do. I'll die first.
Isaiah waved a dismissive hand.
Easy to be brave when you aren't hungry. Go a few days, without any other sustenance, and yes, these three will start to look very good. And they are. Dampiers are delicious. Some prefer them to Moroi. And while I myself have never shared such beliefs, I can certainly appreciate the variety.
Christian scowled.
Don't believe me?
Asked Isaiah.
Then let me prove it.
He walked back over to my side of the room.
I realized what he was going to do and spoke without fully thinking things through.
Use me, I blurted out. Drink from me.
Isaiah's smug look faltered for a moment, and his eyebrows rose.
You're volunteering?
I've done it before. Let Moroi feed off me, I mean. I don't mind. I like it. Leave the rest of them alone.
Rose! Exclaimed Mason.
I ignored him and looked beseechingly at Isaiah. I didn't want him to feed off me. The thought made me sick. But I had given blood before, and I'd rather him take pints from me before he touched Eddie or Mason. I couldn't read his expression as he sized me up. For half a second, I thought he might go for it. But instead, he shook his head.
No, not you. Not yet.
He walked over and stood before Eddie. I pulled against my flex cuffs so hard that they dug painfully into my skin. They didn't give.
No, leave him alone.
Quiet,
snapped Isaiah, without looking at me. He rested one hand on the side of Eddie's face. Eddie trembled and had gone so pale I thought he would faint.
I can make this easy, or I can make it hurt. Your silence will encourage the former.
I wanted to scream, wanted to call Isaiah all sorts of names and make all sorts of threats, but I couldn't. My eyes flicked around the room, searching for exits, as I had so many times before. But there were none, just blank, bare, white walls. No windows. The one precious door always guarded. I was helpless. Just as helpless as I'd been from the moment they'd pulled us into the van. I felt like crying, more from frustration than fear. What kind of guardian would I be if I couldn't protect my friends? But I stayed quiet, and a look of satisfaction crossed Isaiah's face. The fluorescent lighting gave his skin a sickly, grayish hue, emphasizing the dark circles under his eyes. I wanted to punch him.
Good.
He smiled at Eddie and held his face so that the two made direct eye contact.
Now, you won't fight me, will you?
As I've mentioned, Lyssa was good at compulsion, but she couldn't have done this. In seconds, Eddie was smiling.
No,
I won't fight you.
Good, repeated Isaiah.
And you'll give me your neck freely, won't you?
Of course, replied Eddie, tilting his head back. Isaiah brought his mouth down, and I looked away, trying to focus on the threadbare carpet instead. I didn't want to see this. I heard Eddie emit a soft, happy moan. The feeding itself was relatively quiet. No slurping or anything like that.
There.
I glanced back when I heard Isaiah speak again. Blood dripped from his lips, and he ran his tongue across them. I couldn't see the wound on Eddie's neck, but I suspected it was bloody and horrible, too. Maya and Christian stared wide-eyed, both with fear and fascination. Eddie gazed off in a happy, drugged haze, high from both the endorphins and the compulsion. Isaiah straightened up and smiled at the Moroi licking the last of the blood off his lips.
You see,
he told them, moving toward the door.
It's just that easy.
Chapter 20. We needed an escape plan, and we needed it fast. Unfortunately,
My only ideas called for things that really weren't under my control, like us being left completely alone so we could sneak off, or having stupid guards whom we could easily fool and slip away from. At the very least, we should have been sloppily secured so that we could break free. None of that was happening, though. After almost 24 hours, our situations hadn't really changed. We were still prisoners, still securely bound. Our captors stayed vigilant, almost as efficient as any group of guardians. Almost. The closest we got to freedom was heavily supervised and extremely embarrassing bathroom breaks. The men gave us no food or water. That was rough on me. But the human and vampire mix made Dampier's hardy. I could handle being uncomfortable, even though I was fast reaching a point where I would have killed for a cheeseburger and some really, really greasy fries. For Maya and Christian, well, things were a little harder. Maroy could go weeks without food and water if they were still getting blood. Without blood, they could manage a few days before getting sick and weak, so long as they still had other sustenance. That was how Lyssa and I had managed while living on our own, since I hadn't been able to feed her every day. Take away food, blood, and water, and Maroy's endurance dropped through the floor. I was hungry, but Maya and Christian were ravenous. Already their faces looked gaunt, their eyes almost feverish. Isaiah made matters worse during his subsequent visits. Each time he would come down and ramble on in his annoying, taunting way. Then, before leaving, he'd take another drink from Eddie. By the third visit, I could practically see Maya and Christian salivating. Between the endorphins and lack of food, I was pretty sure Eddie didn't even know where we were. I couldn't really sleep under these conditions, but during the second day, I started nodding off now and then. Starvation and exhaustion will do that to you. At one point, I actually dreamed. Surprising, since I didn't really think I could fall into a deep slumber under such insane conditions. In the dream, and I knew perfectly well that it was a dream, I stood on a beach. It took me a moment to recognize just which beach it was. It was along the Oregon coast, sandy and warm, with the Pacific unfolding in the distance. Lyssa and I had traveled out here once when we lived in Portland. It had been a gorgeous day, but she couldn't handle being out in that much sun. We'd kept the visit short as a result, but I'd always wished I could have stayed longer and basked in all that. Now I had all the light and warmth I could want.
"Little Dampier," said a voice behind me. "It's about time."
I turned around in surprise and found Adrian Ivashkov watching me. He had on khakis and a loose shirt, and in a surprisingly casual style for him, wore no shoes. Wind ruffled his brown hair, and he kept his hands stuffed in his pockets as he regarded me with that trademark smirk of his.
"Still got your protection," he added.
Frowning, I thought for a moment he was staring at my chest. Then I realized his eyes were on my stomach. I had on jeans and a bikini top, and once again, the little blue eye pendant dangled from my belly button. The tchotchke was on my wrist.
"And you're in the sun again," I said. "So I suppose it's your dream?"
"It's our dream."
I wiggled my toes in the sand. How can two people share a dream?
People share dreams all the time, Rose.
I looked up at him with a frown. "I need to know what you mean, about there being darkness around me. What does it mean?"
"Honestly, I don't know. Everyone has light around them, except for you. You have shadows. You take them from Lyssa."
My confusion grew. "I don't understand."
"I can't get into it right now," he told me. "That's not why I'm here."
"You're here for a reason?"
I asked, my eyes wandering to the blue-gray water. It was hypnotic.
"You aren't just here to be here?"
He stepped forward and caught my hand, forcing me to look up at him. All amusement was gone. He was dead serious.
"Where are you?" here? I said, puzzled. Just like you.
Adrian shook his head. No, that's not what I mean. In the real world, where are you?
The real world?
Around us, the beach suddenly blurred, like a film going out of focus. Moments later, everything steadied itself. I racked my brain. The real world. Images came to me. Chairs. Guards. Flex cuffs. In a basement, I said slowly. Alarm suddenly shattered the beauty of the moment as everything came back to me.
Oh, God, Adrian, you've got to help Maya and Christian. I can't...
Adrian's grip on my hand tightened. Where? The world shimmered again, and this time it didn't refocus. He swore.
Where are you, Rose?
The world began to disintegrate. Adrian began to disintegrate.
A basement. In a house. In...
He was gone. I woke up. The sound of the room's door opening startled me back to reality. Isaiah swept in with Elena in tow. I had to fight a sneer when I saw her. He was arrogant and mean and all around evil. But he was that way because he was a leader. He had the strength and power to back up his cruelty, even if I didn't like it. But Elena? She was a lackey. She threatened us and made snide comments, but most of her ability to do so came from being his sidekick. She was a total suck-up.
Hello, children, he said. How are we doing today?
Sullen glares answered him. He strolled over to Maya and Christian, hands folded behind his back.
Any changes of heart since my last visit?
You're taking an awfully long time, and it's upsetting Elena. She's very hungry, you see, but I suspect not as hungry as you two.
Christian narrowed his eyes.
Fuck off,
he said through gritted teeth. Elena snarled and lunged forward.
Don't you dare!
Isaiah waved her off.
Leave him alone. It just means we wait a little longer. And really, it's an entertaining wait.
Elena's eyes shot daggers at Christian.
Honestly, continued Isaiah, watching Christian, I can't decide which I want more. To kill you, or have you join us. Either option offers its own amusements.
Don't you get tired of hearing yourself talk?
Asked Christian. Isaiah considered.
No, not really. And I don't get tired of this, either.
He turned around and walked toward Eddie. Poor Eddie could barely sit upright in his chair anymore after all the feedings he'd gone through. Worse, Isaiah didn't even need to use compulsion. Eddie's face simply lit up with a stupid grin, eager for the next bite. He was as addicted as a feeder. Anger and disgust flooded through me.
Damn it! I yelled. Leave him alone!
Isaiah glanced back at me.
Be silent, girl. I don't find you nearly as amusing as I do Mr. O'Zara.
Yeah?
I snarled.
If I piss you off so much, then use me to prove your stupid point. Bite me instead. Put me in my place and show me what a badass you are.
No,
exclaimed Mason.
Use me.
Isaiah rolled his eyes.
Good God, what a noble lot. You're all Spartacus, aren't you?
He strolled away from Eddie and put a finger under Mason's chin, tilting his head up.
But you, Isaiah said, don't really mean it. You only offer because of her.
He released Mason and walked in front of me, staring down with those black, black eyes.
And you? I didn't really believe you at first either, but now?
He knelt down so he was at my height. I refused to look away from his eyes, even though I knew that put me at risk of compulsion.
I think you really mean it.
And it's not all nobility, either.
You do want it. You really have been bitten before.
His voice was magical. Hypnotic. He wasn't using compulsion exactly, but he definitely had an unnatural charisma surrounding him. Like Lyssa and Adrian, I hung on his every word.
Lots of times, I'd guess, he added.
He leaned toward me, breath hot against my neck. Somewhere beyond him, I could hear Mason shouting something, but all of my focus was on how close Isaiah's teeth were to my skin. In the last few months, I'd only been bitten once, and that was when Lyssa had had an emergency. Before then, she'd bitten me at least twice a week for 2 years, and I had only recently come to realize how addicted to that I'd been. There is nothing, nothing in the world like a Moroi bite, like the flood of bliss it sends into you. Of course, by all accounts, Strigoi bites were even more powerful. I swallowed, suddenly aware of my own heavy breathing and racing heart. Isaiah gave a low chuckle.
Yes, you're a blood whore in the making. Unfortunate for you, because I'm not going to give you what you want.
He backed away, and I slumped forward in my chair. Without further delay, he returned to Eddie and drank. I couldn't watch, but it was because of envy this time, not disgust. Longing burned inside me. I ached for that bite, ached for it with every nerve in my body. When Isaiah finished, he started to leave the room, then paused. He directed his words at Maya and Christian.
Don't delay, he warned. Seize your opportunity to be saved.
He tilted his head toward me.
You even have a willing victim.
He left. Across the room, Christian met my eyes. Somehow, his face looked even gaunter than it had a couple of hours ago. Hunger burned in his gaze, and I knew I wore the complimentary one, a desire to sate that hunger.
God, we were so screwed. I think Christian realized it at the same time. His lips twisted into a bitter smile.
You never looked so good, Rose,
he managed, just before the guards told him to shut up. I dozed a little throughout the day, but Adrian didn't return to my dreams. Instead, while hovering just at the edge of consciousness, I found myself slipping into a familiar territory. Lyssa's head. After all the weirdness of these last 2 days, being in her mind felt like a homecoming. She was in one of the lodge's banquet rooms, only it was empty. She sat on the floor of the far side of it, trying to stay inconspicuous. Nervousness filled her. She was waiting for something, or rather, someone. A few minutes later, Adrian slipped in.
Cousin,
he said by way of greeting. He sat down beside her and drew his knees up, unconcerned about his expensive dress pants.
Sorry I'm late.
It's okay, she said.
You didn't know I was here until you saw me, did you?
She shook her head, disappointed. I felt more confused than ever.
And sitting with me, you can't really notice anything?
No.
He shrugged. Well, hopefully it'll come soon.
How does it look for you? She asked, burning with curiosity.
Do you know what auras are?
They're like bands of light around people, right? Some New Age thing.
Something like that. Everyone has a sort of spiritual energy that radiates out from them. Well, almost everyone.
His hesitation made me wonder if he was thinking of me and the darkness I allegedly walked in.
Based on the color and appearance, you can tell a lot about a person. Well, if anyone could actually see auras, that is.
And you can? She said. And you can tell I use spirit for my aura?
Yours is mostly gold, like mine. It'll shift with other colors depending on the situation, but the gold always stays.
How many other people out there like us do you know?
Not many. I just see them every once in a while.
They kind of keep to themselves.
You're the first I've actually ever talked to. I didn't even know it was called spirit. Wish I'd known about this when I didn't specialize. I just figured I was some kind of freak.
Lissa held up her arm and stared, willing herself to see the light shining around it. Nothing. She sighed and let the arm drop. And that's when I got it. Adrian was a spirit user, too. That was why he'd been so curious about Lissa. Why he'd wanted to talk to her and ask her about the bond and her specialization. It also explained a lot of other things, like that charisma I couldn't seem to escape when I was near him. He'd used compulsion that day Lissa and I had been in his room. That was how he'd forced Dimitri to release him.
So, they finally let you go?
Adrian asked her.
Yeah, they finally decided I really didn't know anything.
Good,
he said. He frowned, and I realized he was sober for a change.
And you're sure you don't?
I already told you that. I can't make the bond work that way.
Well, you've got to.
She glared. What? You think I'm holding back? If I could find her, I would.
I know. But to have it all, you must have a strong connection. Use that to talk to her in her dreams. I tried, but I can't hang on long enough to...
What did you say? Exclaimed Lissa. Talk to her in her dreams? Now he looked puzzled.
Sure. Don't you know how to do that?
No, are you kidding? How is that even possible?
My dreams.
I remembered Lissa talking about unexplained Moroi phenomena, how there might be spirit powers out there beyond healing, things no one even knew about yet. It would appear that Adrian being in my dreams was no coincidence. He'd managed to get inside my head. Maybe in a way similar to how I saw Lissa's mind. The thought made me uneasy. Lissa could barely even grasp it. He ran a hand through his hair and tipped his head back, staring at the crystal chandelier above as he pondered.
Okay. So, you don't see auras, and you don't talk to people in dreams. What do you do?
I can heal people.
Animals. Plants, too.
I can bring dead things back to life.
Really? He looked impressed.
Okay. You get credit for that. What else?
I can use compulsion.
We can all do that.
No, I can really do it. It's not hard. I can make people do anything I want. Even bad things.
So can I.
His eyes lit up.
I wonder what would happen if you tried to use it on me.
She hesitated and absent-mindedly ran her fingers over the textured red carpet.
Well, I can't.
You just said you could.
I can, just not right now. I take this prescription for depression and other stuff, and it cuts me off from the magic.
He threw his arms up in the air.
How can I teach you to walk through dreams, then? How else are we going to find Rose?
Look! She said angrily. I don't want to take the meds, but when I was off them, I did really crazy stuff, dangerous stuff. That's what spirit does to you.
I don't take anything. I'm okay,
he said.
No, he wasn't, I realized.
Lissa realized it, too. You got really weird that day when Dimitri was in your room, she pointed out. You started rambling, and you didn't make any sense.
Oh, that? Yeah. It happens now and then, but seriously, not often. Once a month, if that.
He sounded sincere. Lissa stared at him, suddenly reevaluating everything. What if Adrian could do it? What if he could use spirit without pills and without any harmful side effects? It would be everything she had been hoping for. Besides, she wasn't even sure if the pills would keep working anymore. He smiled, guessing what she was thinking.
What do you say, cousin?
he asked. He didn't need to use compulsion. His offer was plenty tempting in its own right.
I can teach you everything I know if you're able to touch the magic. It'll take a while for the pills to get out of your system. But once they do...
Chapter 21. This was so not what I needed right now. I could have handled anything else Adrian did. Hitting on her, getting her to smoke his ridiculous cigarettes, whatever. But not this. Lyssa quitting those pills was exactly what I'd wanted to avoid. Reluctantly, I pulled out of her head and returned to my own grim situation. I would have liked to see what further developed with Adrian and Lyssa, but watching them would do no good. Okay, I really needed a plan now. I needed action. I needed to get us out of here. But glancing around me, I found myself no closer to escape than I had been earlier, and I spent the next few hours brooding and speculating. We had 3 guards today. They looked a little bored, but not enough to slack off. Nearby, Eddie appeared unconscious, and Mason stared blankly at the floor. Across the room, Christian glared at nothing in particular, and I think Maya was sleeping. Painfully aware of how dry my throat was, I almost laughed in recalling how I told her water magic was useless. It might not do much in a fight, but I would have given anything for her to summon up some. Magic. Why hadn't I thought of this before? We weren't helpless. Not entirely. A plan slowly coalesced in my mind. A plan that was probably insane, but was also the best we had. My heart thudded with anticipation, and I immediately schooled my features to calmness before the guards noticed my sudden insight. On the opposite side of the room, Christian was watching me. He'd seen the brief flare of excitement and realized I'd thought of something. He watched me curiously, as ready for action as I was. God, how could we pull this off? I needed his help, but I had no real way of letting him know what I had in mind. In fact, I wasn't even sure if he could help me at all. He was pretty weak. I held his gaze, willing him to understand that something was going to happen. There was confusion on his face, but it was paired with determination. After making sure none of the guards were looking directly at me, I shifted slightly, giving a small tug at my wrists. I glanced behind me as much as I could, then met Christian's eyes again. He frowned, and I repeated the gesture. "Hey," I said loudly. Maya and Mason both jerked in surprise. "Are you guys really going to keep starving us? Can't we at least have some water or something?" "Shut up," said one of the guards. It was a pretty standard answer whenever any of us spoke. "Come on," I used my best bitchy voice. "Not even like a sip of something? My throat's burning, practically on fire." My gaze flicked to Christian as I said those last few words, then returned to the guard who'd spoken. As expected, he rose from his seat and lurched toward me.
"Do not make me repeat myself," he growled.
I didn't know if he'd really do anything violent, but I had no interest in pushing it just yet. Besides, I'd accomplished my goal. If Christian couldn't take the hint, there was nothing else to be done for it. Hoping I looked afraid, I shut up. The guard returned to his seat, and after a while he stopped watching me. I looked at Christian again and gave the wrist tug. "Come on, come on," I thought. "Put it together, Christian." His eyebrows suddenly shot up, and he stared at me in amazement. Well, he'd apparently figured out something. I just hoped it was what I'd wanted. His look turned questioning, as though asking if I was really serious. I nodded emphatically. He frowned in thought for a few moments and then took a deep, steadying breath.
"All right," he said.
Everyone jumped again.
"Shut up,"
said one of the guards automatically. He sounded weary.
No, said Christian. I'm ready. Ready to drink.
Everyone in the room froze for the space of a few heartbeats, including me. This wasn't exactly what I'd had in mind. The guard's leader stood up.
Do not screw around with us.
I'm not, said Christian. He had a feverish, desperate look on his face that I didn't think was entirely faked.
I'm tired of this. I want to get out of here, and I don't want to die. I'll drink, and I want her.
He nodded toward me. Maya squeaked in alarm. Mason called Christian something that would have earned him a detention back at school. This definitely wasn't what I'd had in mind. The other two guards looked at their leader questioningly.
Should we ask Isaiah?
Asked one of them.
I don't think he's here, said the leader.
He studied Christian for a few seconds and then made a decision.
And I don't want to bother him anyway if this is a joke. Let him go, and we'll see.
One of the men produced a pair of sharp pliers. He moved behind Christian and leaned down. I heard the sound of plastic popping as the flex cuffs gave way. Grabbing a hold of Christian's arm, the guard jerked him upright and led him over to me.
Christian!
Exclaimed Mason, fury filling his voice. He struggled against his constraints, shaking his chair a little.
Are you out of your mind? Don't let them do this! You guys have to die, but I don't,
snapped Christian, tossing his black hair out of his eyes.
There's no other way out of this.
I really didn't know what was going on now, but I was pretty sure I should be showing a lot more emotion if I was about to die. Two guards flanked Christian on either side, watching warily as he leaned toward me. Christian, I whispered, surprised at how easy it was to sound afraid. Don't do this. His lips twisted into one of the bitter smiles he produced so well.
You and I have never liked each other, Rose. If I've got to kill someone, it might as well be you.
His words were icy, precise,
believable.
Besides, I thought you wanted this.
Not this. Please, don't.
One of the guards shoved Christian.
Get it over with, or get back to your chair.
Still wearing that dark smile, Christian shrugged.
Sorry, Rose. You're going to die anyway. Why not do it for a good cause?
He brought his face down to my neck.
This is probably going to hurt, he added.
I actually doubted it would. If he was really going to do it. Because he wasn't. Right? I shifted uneasily. By all accounts, if you got all your blood sucked out of you, you also got enough endorphins pumped in during the process to dull most of the pain. It was like going to sleep. Of course, that was all speculation. People who died from vampire bites didn't really come back to report on the experience. Christian nuzzled my neck, moving his face under my hair so that it partially obscured him. His lips brushed my skin, every bit as soft as I recalled from when he and Lyssa kissed. A moment later, the points of his fangs touched my skin. And then I felt pain. Real pain. But it wasn't coming from the bite. His teeth only pressed against my skin. They didn't break it. His tongue moved against my neck in a lapping motion, but there was no blood to suck. If anything, it was more like some kind of weird, twisted kiss. No. The pain came from my wrists. A burning pain. Christian was using his magic to channel heat into my flex cuffs, just as I had wanted him to. He'd understood my message. The plastic grew hotter and hotter as he continued his barely there drinking. Anyone who'd been looking closely would have been able to tell he was half faking it, but too much of my hair was blocking the guard's view. I knew plastic was hard to melt, but only now did I really, really understand what that meant. The temperatures required to do any damage were off the charts. It was like plunging my hands into lava. The flex cuffs seared my skin, hot and terrible. I squirmed, hoping I could relieve the pain. I couldn't. What I did notice, however, was that the cuffs gave a little when I moved. They were getting softer. Okay, that was something. I just had to hold out a little longer. Desperately, I tried to focus on Christian's bite and distract myself. It worked for about 5 seconds. He wasn't giving me much in the way of endorphins, certainly not enough to combat that increasingly horrible pain. I whimpered, probably making myself more convincing.
"I can't believe it,"
muttered one of the guards. "He's actually doing it." Beyond them, I thought I heard the sound of Maya crying. The cuff's burning increased. I'd never felt anything so painful in my life, and I'd been through a lot. Passing out was rapidly becoming a very real possibility.
"Hey," the guard suddenly said, "what's that smell?"
That smell was melting plastic, or maybe my melting flesh. Honestly, it didn't matter, because the next time I moved my wrists, they broke through the gooey, scalding cuffs. I had 10 seconds of surprise, and I used them. I leapt out of my chair, pushing Christian backward in the process. He'd had a guard on either side of him, and one still held the pliers. In a single motion, I grabbed the pliers from the guy and plunged them into his cheek. He gave some kind of gurgled scream, but I didn't wait to see what happened. My window of surprise was closing, and I couldn't waste time. As soon as I let go of the pliers, I punched the second guy. My kicks were stronger than my punches, as a general rule, but I still hit him hard enough to startle him and make him stagger. By then, the guard's leader was in action. As I'd feared, he still had a gun, and he went for it. "Don't move," he yelled, aiming at me. I froze. The guard I'd punched came forward and grabbed my arm. Nearby, the guy I'd stabbed was moaning on the floor. Still training the gun on me, the leader started to say something and then yelped in alarm. The gun glowed faintly orange and fell from his hands. Where he'd held it, the skin burned red and angry. Christian had heated the metal, I realized. Yeah, we definitely should have been using the magic thing from the start. If we got out of this, I was going to take up Tasha's cause. The Moroi anti-magic custom was so instilled in our brains that we hadn't even thought to try this sooner. It was stupid. I turned on the guy holding me. I don't think he expected a girl my size to put up so much of a fight. Plus, he was still kind of stunned over what happened to the other guy and the gun. I managed enough room to get in a kick to his stomach, a kick that would have earned me an A in my combat class. He grunted at the impact, and the motion propelled him back into the wall. In a flash, I was on him. Grabbing a fistful of his hair, I slammed his head against the ground hard enough to knock him out, but not kill him. Immediately, I sprang up, surprised the leader hadn't come after me yet. It shouldn't have taken him that long to recover from the shock of the heated gun, but when I turned around, the room was quiet. The leader lay unconscious on the ground, with a newly freed mason hovering over him. Nearby, Christian held the pliers in one hand and the gun in the other. It had to still be hot, but Christian's power must have made him immune. He was aiming at that man I'd stabbed. The guy wasn't unconscious, merely bleeding, but, like I had, he froze beneath that barrel. "Holy shit!" I muttered, taking in the scene. Staggering over to Christian, I held out my hand. "Give me that before you hurt somebody!" I expected a biting remark, but he simply handed the gun over with shaking hands. I shoved it into my belt. Studying him further, I saw how pale he was. He looked like he could collapse at any moment. He'd done some pretty major magic for someone who'd been starved for 2 days. "Mace, get the cuffs," I said. Without turning his back on the rest of us, Mason took a few steps back toward the box where our captors had kept their stash of flex cuffs. He pulled out 3 strips of plastic and then something else. With a questioning glance at me, he held up a roll of duct tape. "Perfect," I said. We bound our captors to the chairs. One had remained conscious, but we knocked him out too and then put duct tape over all their mouths. They'd eventually come to, and I didn't want them making any noise. After releasing Maya and Eddie, the five of us huddled together and planned our next move. Christian and Eddie could barely stand, but at least Christian was aware of his surroundings. Maya's face was streaked with tears, but I suspected she'd be able to take orders. That left Mason and me as the most functional in the group.
"That guy's watch says it's morning," he said.
"All we've got to do is get outside, and they can't touch us. As long as there are no more humans, at least."
"They said Isaiah was gone," said Maya in a small voice. "We should just be able to leave, right?"
"Those men haven't left in hours," I said. "They could be wrong. We can't do anything stupid."
Carefully, Mason opened the door to our room and peered out into the empty hallway.
"Think there's a way outside down here?"
"That'd make our lives easier," I muttered.
I glanced back at the others.
"Stay here. We're going to check out the rest of the basement."
"What if somebody comes?" exclaimed Maya.
"They won't," I assured her. I was actually pretty sure there was no one else in the basement. They would have come running with all that racket. And if anyone tried to come down the stairs, we would hear them first.
Still, Mason and I moved cautiously as we scouted around the basement, watching each other's backs and checking around corners. It was every bit the rat's maze I remembered from our initial capture. Twisted hallways and lots of rooms. One by one, we opened each door. Every room was empty, save for the occasional chair or two. I shuddered, thinking that all of these were probably used as prisons, just as ours had been.
"Not a goddamn window in this whole place," I muttered when we finished our sweep. "We've got to go upstairs."
We headed back toward our room, but before we got there, Mason caught hold of my hand.
"Rose."
I stopped and looked up at him.
"Yeah?"
His blue eyes, more serious than I'd ever seen them, looked down at me regretfully.
"I really screwed things up."
I thought about all the events that had led to this.
"We screwed things up, Mason." He sighed.
I hope when all this is done, we can sit down and talk and figure things out. I shouldn't have gotten mad at you."
I wanted to tell him that that wasn't going to happen, that when he'd disappeared, I'd actually been on my way to tell him things wouldn't be better between us. Since this didn't seem like the right time or place to bring up a breakup, I lied. I squeezed his hand.
"I hope so, too."
He smiled, and we returned to the others.
"All right," I told them. "Here's how it's going to be."
We quickly hashed out a plan and then crept up the stairs. I led, followed by Maya as she tried to support a reluctant Christian. Mason brought up the rear, practically dragging Eddie.
"I should be first," Mason murmured as we stood at the top of the stairs.
"You aren't," I snapped back, resting my hand on the doorknob.
"Yeah, but if something happens..."
"Mason?"
I interrupted. I stared at him hard, and suddenly, I had a brief flash of my mother that day when the Drozdov attack had broken. Calm and controlled, even in the wake of something so horrible. They'd needed a leader, just like this group did now, and I tried as hard as I could to channel her.
"If something happens, you get them out of here. Run fast and run far. Do not come back without a herd of guardians."
"You'll be the one who gets attacked first. What am I supposed to do?"
he hissed.
"Leave you?"
"Yes. You forget about me if you can get them out."
"Rose, I'm not going to..."
"Mason?"
I again envisioned my mother, fighting for that strength and power to lead others.
"Can you do this or not?"
We stared at each other for several heavy moments while the others held their breaths.
"I can do this," he said stiffly.
I nodded and turned back around. The basement door squeaked when I opened it, and I grimaced at the sound. Scarcely daring to breathe, I stood perfectly still at the top of the stairs, waiting and listening.
The house and its eccentric decorating looked the same as when we'd been brought in. Dark blinds covered all of the windows, but along the edges, I could see bright light peeping in.